Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Global Math Department tonight. We are going to have an awesome talk. This is part two, but I'm pretty sure it's fine if you didn't listen to part one. If you afterwards want to go back and listen to part one, it is linked through the previous webinar, so you can watch it. It was recorded just like tonight's. Before I give our presenters a chance to introduce themselves, I'm Sheila. I'm one of the hosts here at the Global Math Department, and thank you so much for joining us. If this is your first time joining us, Global Math Department is just a group of educators from all math teachers and educators from all over the world who just want to share what we've learned and a chance to interact with each other, especially since, you know, sometimes our math departments are very small or very large. So it's a chance for people to get together from all over. And we are truly global tonight. One of our presenters is joining us from Spain. And I'm actually going to let them both go ahead and introduce themselves. So Megan and Ryan, take it away.
Great. Thanks so much. I'll start. And Ryan and I are going to kind of split the presentation this evening. And again, if you joined in June, you did get part one, and that will just be something you can go back and connect the two parts together. I am currently in Madrid, Spain. I work independently with schools around the world around K-12 math teaching and learning. And that work started when I was still living in California, and Ryan and I connected our work while we were both faculty at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. And I think one of the things that truly connects the work we do is I tend to have a focus of pre-K to grade 8, both in my expertise and background in teaching, but also in the work that I've been able to focus deeply around after I left the classroom, which has been about the past 7 years of my 20 years in education. So that's a little bit about me. Ryan, you want to jump in?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Ryan Grady. I'm currently the head of secondary school at Pilgrim School in Los Angeles. And as Megan said, we've worked together for many years on mathematics. So I've also been a math teacher for my whole career, so going on 15 years now, and I've taught everything from middle school math through undergraduate level calculus, so and kind of everything in between. So really excited to be jumping in tonight to talk a little bit about just some of the ways that our identity can impact ourselves as math educators and how we can really take this work beyond just our small group here this evening, but back to your classrooms and back to your schools.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. So I'm going to start with what will be kind of a speed and brief overview of part one. So just kind of moving through the slides, and again, with purpose only to bring people in that weren't in the webinar in June, and then just to give a highlight and connect it back. So as Ryan said, it's really thinking about how our own beliefs impact our identity as math educators. And often when he and I do work with teams at schools, with groups of teachers, workshops, whatever it might be, we start with the identity piece. So as we did in June, we kind of went through what we're thinking about when we teach. And sometimes we refer to it as teaching and learning teams because we recognize that your role may be one that is a curriculum lead. You might be a department chair. Perhaps you're moving into coaching, or like Ryan, you might be a director of a division or a school. And that's really the goal of the two sessions that we're hosting, is how do we do this work together? So as you think about the teaching and learning teams you're a part of, consider these questions. And these are questions we just want you to hold on to while we're talking together the next hour. So who are we? Why are we doing this? And why are we doing this in this way? So specific to math education. And that's where we started in June. And we talked about our belief systems. Something that we like to use when we're working with groups is the triple track agenda. And it's a nice frame, and we talked a lot about this in June, but a frame just to keep in mind where you are. There's the personal track, the classroom track, and the group track. So you might be thinking about where each of these sort of meets who you are currently in your role. And that's just a nice space anytime you're working with groups, as a teacher, again, as a lead, whatever it might be, helping everyone sort of put themselves in the space of the learning. And that's from the June presentation as well. And then two handouts that we're going to release, and you might be familiar with these come out of the principles to actions work from NCTM. So it begins with sort of the guiding principles for school mathematics. And we'll just share both of those in the downloads. You'll see actually three pieces. And you're welcome to browse those. That was where our focus was in June, just talking through all the components that bring sort of K-12 mathematics together. And that included the 8 teaching practices, which you might be familiar with. And again, this is just an overview. And then a space that we really kind of center ourselves when we're working together is this quote from Principles to Actions, that we must move from pockets of excellence to systemic excellence by providing mathematics education that supports the learning of all students at the highest possible level. So we really put our own beliefs in the same space, which we did in the previous webinar, that we do think all students can learn math at the highest level. So here's a frame for tonight. The slide that you're currently looking at sort of highlights the two pieces we did around what we consider guided professional growth. So this could be work that we do over a weekend workshop. It could be work that we frame for an entire year. That might be something more that Ryan's role would hold when he's working with teams throughout the school year. Perhaps it's over multiple points in the year, which is what my work might look like, where I'm coming in at different specific points in the year. So you might be thinking about when you could host professional growth and learning around mathematics, and it might be at checkpoints, maybe a fall, winter, spring. We've also done this work over a week-long seminar in the summer. So we want to put that into the space tonight to recognize that we're not suggesting you do all of these things in one setting, but rather they're interwoven and they're the pieces that are meant to connect over time. So we focused on purpose setting and checking in what that means and setting norms and expectations. And we looked closely at the teaching and learning beliefs. So tonight we're going to look at some shared learning experiences. And really our goal with all of you is to highlight how would we do that? So really this webinar is slightly different in that we're not going through the mathematics explicitly, but rather the teaching and learning of math and the professional growth around it. So how we would lead those things with teams. And we'll highlight some of the tasks and experiences and the ways we do that. Again, these aren't limited to only these things, but rather a resource for all of you to use in whatever way makes sense. And then not only using reflection and feedback together tonight, but to use it also as a model for how we would do that with teams. So we're going to start with professional growth around shared learning, how we frame research and articles. And Ryan's going to do a little bit of an overview on that, and I'll continue to release things in the documents shared. So Ryan, I'll hand it off to you.
Thanks, Megan. I think it's crucial when you're working with groups of teachers to really get grounded in the values, grounded in the identity of the group, and really grounded in the research. So one of the key pieces that we always work with teachers on, whether it's groups of elementary school teachers all the way through your high school math departments, we really need to make sure that we stay grounded in the research. But we also need to make sure that everybody's voice is heard. We can often get into situations working in groups, especially in some of our larger departments, where one or two voices might tend to dominate the conversation. So some of the things that we're going to do in the next few examples that we're going to give just give you an idea of some protocols that you can use, along with some sample articles that you can see some of the ways that we've been able to introduce and have some of those conversations. Is really crucial. So I'm gonna kick it to the next slide here. This is an article by Steve Limewand for Teaching Friendly Postulates for Thriving in a Sea of Change.
Ryan, can I pause you for just a second? Really, sorry to interrupt you. Your mic is coming through from several people in the public chat or letting us know that your mic is sounding very broken up. So I just want to pause you before you get too far and see if we can check that.
That's okay. Let me work on that. Why don't you keep going, Megan? I'll work on that.
Okay. So this article you may be familiar with, and our goal right now is not to read this article together, but we will share this as a handout. So each time we share something, I believe it comes through your handout queue. And we really like this article. It actually comes out of a piece that was over 10 years old at that point. And it came back as a president's choice because it still had sort of staying power that many years later. So it came originally in 1994 and was republished in 2007. And it's just an example of one article that we feel has the context that would appeal to, and we've done this with pre-K teachers all the way through grade 12 and beyond. We've also both worked with teachers who are in graduate school. So we try to look for those research bases or those pieces that we feel appeals to everyone in some way, but also gives us a space to start the work together. So this is one of those examples. And Ryan, do you want to try? Are you in there? Maybe not. All right, I'm going to move us through. So again, we're not reading the article together tonight, but rather we want to highlight how we would manage reading together. And as Ryan pointed out, one of the things we do is use these protocols. And the protocols are tight structures so that all voices are in the room, as mentioned. And then the goal for the participants is that every voice gets to be heard as well. So we rely heavily on the group of protocols, and I'm going to put them right now into the chat room as a website. They come out of the, you'll see it now. I want to make sure everybody has that. They come out of the National School Reform open source, so you can download any of these that you want. And this particular protocol is called one word, phrase, or sentence. So the way that this might look is as we're having participants read for postulates of change, they're identifying individually a sentence, a phrase, and a word that really resonates with them. So in whatever way that jumps out, and we sort of encourage everybody to highlight several because that's going to naturally happen. And as they're highlighting those things, they're really thinking about why that sentence, phrase, or word. And what it does is pulls everyone into the round robin format of sharing. So in that same order, sentence, phrase, and word, everyone would share without crosstalk. And that's really tricky. And you may have done this before. Maybe you're familiar with these protocols. And it kind of sets the pace for what we want that shared learning to look like. And if you anticipate that you get an hour of professional development time with your teams or your colleagues, this is an important component of that hour because it's allowing space for the research, space for the shared learning, and then also the option to have conversations. So each person would share their sentence, they'd highlight where it is in the article, and they simply read around their sentence and that's it. So there's no crosstalk where you say, I agree, or I'm wondering about this, and the person speaking just names the sentence. And then after that round, which would be the sentence round, the whole group talks at that point. So you're looking for themes, you're looking for things that everybody found in common. That's an opportunity to say, I agreed, I had the same one. And then you do the same for phrase and the same for word. And that gives an option for everyone to participate. It also holds tight to a structure and protocol so that if time is of the essence or if there's a sort of a goal to get some reading in and then do an activity, this helps everyone participate in that way. So that's one of our favorites. It doesn't have to be used with four postulates of change. We're simply sharing an example of that. And then we would wrap up if we were the presenters or if you're thinking about what this might look like with your teams. We then wrap up with some type of frame. So the slide you're looking at now are literally the four postulates. So we might just highlight the most important points from that article. So we engage as the presenters by joining one of the groups. And then we do whole group engagement by doing some type of wrap up or reflection. So that's what you see there. Ryan, is it working for you?
I'm hoping so. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah, that sounds good. So I'm going to throw it back to you on the mathematics of hope.
Got it. Yeah, so we really like using these protocols, again, as Megan said, to get all the voices into the room and really to surface some of the common themes that the group is addressing. So the Four Postulates of Change is a fantastic article to get started about just what professional growth looks like within your team, whether that's grade level team, department, school-wide, et cetera. So this next article is comes out of U-Cubed, which is Joe Bowler's group at Stanford. And if you're not familiar with them, I highly recommend taking a look at U-Cubed. They have a ton of great resources across the grade level spectrum in mathematics. This is an article that we really like to touch on a lot when we work with groups early on, because this is another one of these articles that surfaces a lot of the values that are in the room, and you can start having some of those critical conversations. You know, where I think a lot of negative conflict can arise in groups is when some of those values are misaligned and they're kind of just pushed under the rug and they're not really addressed. These types of conversations can help surface some of those. So we use a different protocol for the for the mathematics of hope, similar to the one word, one phrase, one sentence. Here's the first turn, last turn. So in this instance, we have everybody reading the article, taking time to highlight kind of three or four items that had particular meaning. So it really could stand out for various reasons. We try to leave that as open as possible, what really stands out to people. And then they share one highlighted item in kind of a round robin fashion, but again, not commenting on it. So you'll notice that in these protocols and in the protocols that Megan shared in the link, it's really important to stick to no crosstalk and to allow for, again, every person to have a chance to share their response so that everybody's values in the group can be heard. So again, for first turn, last turn, they would go in a round robin format, commenting on that one shared statement. So everybody gets a chance in this case to at least comment on what somebody else shared. And then they go around until everyone has actually shared that. And then typically what we like to do is open up the protocol. So it's good to stick to that protocol to at least get everybody's voices heard, and then allowing that to open up. So again, those are just some examples of what we have used for some of these protocols. Again, this comes from the National School Reform Faculty, that website that Megan shared, and there are dozens and dozens of different protocols. So I highly recommend taking a look and just seeing what works for your group. If you're thinking about ways to get this started as well, just framing it with your group that may not be used to this type of experience, framing it is key. So, just trying out the protocol and just, being open that we're going to try something new. We want to make sure everybody's voices in the room get heard, and just being really upfront with people about that. So Ryan, I'll pause for 1 second.
Oh yeah, I'm going to pause this there. You see the question I just threw into the chat.
Yeah. So what is making sense to you about using protocols? What questions might you have still? Any questions or comments up to this point from the audience?
Yeah, we have a couple of minutes here, so this is a perfect space to jump in on anything that you're wondering about. While people are thinking through that, one of the things that we also like about protocols is when you open this resource, and as Ryan said, there are dozens, there's also protocols for things like looking at student work and a slice of work. So bringing student work, which we're big proponents of, to collaborative meetings or to department meetings. There's also tuning adult work. So if there's maybe a new lesson plan or some other type of document that you would want to look at with a team, there are protocols for that as well. And it really, it often requires that there's a facilitator, but it doesn't have to have, you can kind of step between facilitator and participant. And you can literally say, I'm running the facilitation and I will acknowledge when I'm participating. If you have enough people and you have somebody present who can be the facilitator, then they can really stick right to that protocol and physically have it in your hand and just having a copy for everybody. And it, like Ryan said, sometimes it's a little uncomfortable at first, but once people understand that that's how the professional learning is going to look together to honor time and to honor voice and space, it works quite well.
And in terms of that question, what is the most challenging thing about instituting a protocol? I would say it's that facilitation. So you really, whoever is going to be facilitating it, would really want to know the protocol well, be able to set it up, and then be able to redirect people in a, in a collaborative way. So if people do get off protocol, which they will, especially the first few times that they try it out, having the protocol posted on like a poster, you know, like a big giant post-it on the wall so that you could point to the different steps to use as kind of a third point is really helpful. Megan, what are some other challenging things that you have found in using protocols?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that piece that there will be people in the room who might even roll their eyes. That's definitely happened and think, you know, I can handle myself in discussion or I'm a professional. And I think once you get through that first step, that being sort of the more difficult piece, I think people really appreciate in hindsight, and part of every protocol has a reflection or a closure. And it usually is looking back and saying, so how did that go? How did it work for everybody? And I think in hindsight, I have yet to have an experience where most people don't look back and say that helped. And, you know, there's a space where I'm a talker. So I appreciate that one of the things that's recognized is that the stronger voices in the room tend to be the dominant ones. And I'm 100% guilty of that. So I usually start with examples like that to kind of soften the mood if there's a tension around why we need a structure to sort of, you know, control the talk. And that's what some people might feel that it's doing. But otherwise, I've only had success with them. And I have actually really enjoyed not only the ones that we use for the shared learning when we're reading and we're looking at research, but there's text rendering as well when you have a really large body to look through. So things like jigsawing, which I know we're familiar with, but it just gives you that one page structure to get through larger documents together. And then one of my favorite protocols, or the favorite protocols that I like to use, are the ones for the student work. So really looking at student work so that the website is up there. The I believe they're still organized by original protocol I'm looking at. And that's tricky because they're named things. So things like Chalk Talk and Check-In and Collaborative Ghost Walk. And they also have, at least they used to have it in a categorical way. So you could look at looking at student work, or you could look at, you could look at, tuning work or group work and things like that. So there's definitely different ways to search within. I'm looking. Yep. All right. So Ryan, I think we're good to go, and you're going to jump in tasks here.
Yeah. So, part of the importance in working with a group is getting that grounding in values, getting the grounding in a kind of shared language around the research that you're looking at. So you can have something to point back to in conversation. So if you're making decisions about the types of assessments that you're rolling out, or if you're looking at student work, or if you're adopting a new textbook series, you can have something to point back to say, this, you know, does align with our conversations around, some of the research we've read, or it doesn't. So it provides you that kind of third point to look back at. Another key piece of any shared learning that we do together is looking at the math, and so not shying away from really digging into some of the good math tasks and good experiences. And we typically frame our work with tasks in kind of three different ways. So we talk about designing tasks. There's ways to, you take the standard, you take the learning target, and you design a task that really promotes the reasoning, promotes the problem solving from the ground up. There's a lot of tasks that we can just transform. So things that we can take and raise the kind of depth of knowledge level to stuff that's already created. And so we spend some time with teachers working through, okay, if we were to look at this particular task that seems like it may not have a lot of reasoning involved, or it may not have a lot of problem solving involved. How can we take that task and transform it, or how can we tweak it in such a way that maybe elicits some of that reasoning and problem solving? And then, of course, as I think most people watching this webinar through Global Math Department, I would guess that most of you are well aware of there's a tremendous amount of resources online in terms of finding good tasks that are out there. So we kind of look through these three lenses as ways of framing for teachers how they might want to approach tasks. And we recommend doing that in your groups. So, you know, taking a particular task that you might pull from, you know, one of your textbooks and actually working as a group, okay, how can we, you know, raise the level of problem solving here? How can we give kids ways to dive into this problem that allows them to be really working through the math and not just recreating procedures, recreating routines, but really engaging in critical thinking. But again, doing these things together and making it part of your routine. So whether it's part of your department routine that, you know, at the first 10 minutes of every, you know, department meeting or grade level team meeting, somebody's going to share a task that they found, or we're going to take a look at a problem or a task that is already identified and see how we might be able to transform that into something more rich in problem solving and rich in mathematical reasoning. So again, we like to use this frame, and I'll just point out as a reminder of what Megan started with, saying this is certainly not all happening in one day. You know, when we work with groups of teachers, we're working typically over the course of a year or more. So you might think about ways to design this as you're working with your groups, or to bring back to your groups for ideas of just some of those, similar to how we might have classroom routines. You could have some of these kind of standing meeting routines that might look through some of these things. I think Megan's now going to look into some of the examples that we've shared.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So in the next window, we're going to actually, what we would do with participants is actually have mixed table groups. And I want to keep highlighting that too. We actually make sure that we're bringing the whole math team into the same room. And anytime that we can do that, we do. We understand that sometimes it has to be divisional. So we would have participants start by sorting on index cards or post-it notes, whatever it might be, thinking of things that tasks that did not go well in your class. So we're going to ask you guys to jump in on that. So what made a task unsuccessful? So if you're already teaching, if school has started for you, maybe something is already in your brain, or if you're just thinking about that one thing that really stuck in your practice somewhere, or something that you've tried over time, let's just see if we can get a few ideas in the chat window. What made tasks unsuccessful? Yeah, we're seeing not enough time for students to process before class is over. We hear that especially in middle and high school classes. Other ideas? Yeah, from a teacher's perspective, not having prepared sufficiently to present the task, something that we talk about that Ryan mentioned, when we're in our meetings with people or when we're in our routines of our own meetings, starting with the math, and we recommend that same exact thing when you're planning one of those deeper tasks, possibly like a three-act task from Dan Meyer or Graham Fletcher, or an open middle, even starting with a routine like which one doesn't belong, like really thinking through what that task might look like from the student's perspective. And we think by doing it as a teacher, and I recognize we don't always have the time to do all of them, but that might be a place to think about that preparation. Students not seeing the connections that I was hoping they would see. We talk a lot about those critical junctures in teaching. When are those moments that you're leading kids, and they don't seem to be getting to that really critical math thinking or those aha moments that we really were hoping they would see? And when are those teaching moments just ready to happen? And we're going to talk a little bit later about the structure and the frame of what that might look like. Yeah, and the getting stuck on how to engage with the task and not the math. So that might come back to some of those ideas like protocols for adults. What are those things that you set up early in the fall for what it looks like to do math together in your class? And what does it look like to